morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us again. My name is Mark Griggs. I'm an account manager here at Canada Life and your host for this morning's webinar, where I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague Neil Jones, who many of you will know is a member of our award-winning ICANN technical support team. In today's webinar, we're going to be looking at the topic of estate planning, this time with a focus on some of the potential charges that can apply, such as periodic and exit charges. So before we get started, just a couple of housekeeping items to cover off. So for those of you listening live this morning, CPD certificates will be emailed to you within the next couple of days, and that will be sent obviously to the email that you registered with. Unfortunately, we can't give CPD for those of you who are listening to recordings or via our podcast service. But talking of recordings, we'll have the recording of today's webinar uploaded to the archive section of our website, again within the next couple of days, so you can go back and listen at your leisure. You will notice that you've got a facility on your screen to ask questions, so please do raise these as we go along. We'll try and pick up as many of these as possible at the end of the webinar if we have time, but if not, we'll come back to you outside of the webinar if we're overrunning. And obviously there's a section for you to download copies of the slides today, plus a selection of sales aids and briefing notes, as you can see on your screen there. So without further ado, I'll hand over now to Neil, who will talk you through this morning's agenda and the learning objectives. Neil.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. Yeah, good morning, everybody. Right, okay, so what we're going to go through today, we're going to have a look at, we've got a slide on the screen with the learning objectives. So we're going to have a look at periodic and exit charges mainly, and these apply to discretionary trusts or certain types of discretionary trusts and relevant property trusts. So we'll work through how they're calculated, when they apply, and then it'll give you an idea so that when you're dealing with trustees or clients with trusts, you know when action is needed and what that potentially could mean. We'll also have a quick look towards the end around HMRC forms. There was a review by the Office of Tax Simplification, and they issued their first paper last week, which was quite interesting. And so we'll cover off a little bit about that, but it was mainly around sort of unnecessary forms, and you'll see when we get to the end how the number of forms can build up. But more on that as we go through. Okay, so the first thing we need to consider is chargeable lifetime transfers, which obviously we've covered off in other webinars, so we're not going to go into them in too much detail, and we won't go into trust structures in too much detail either, as I say, covered elsewhere. But chargeable lifetime transfers are basically any lifetime gifts that were made into trusts since Gordon Brown changed the trust legislation back in 2006. There are a couple of exceptions, one of them being bare or absolute trusts, and the other being vulnerable persons trusts. But basically everything, every lifetime trust that's set up since March 2006 is going to be a chargeable lifetime transfer on the money going in. Prior to 2006, there was different rules. So occasionally you had sort of money that went into flexible trusts, which were potentially exempt transfers. And that was one of the key differences in March 2006. And so therefore, a lot of providers stopped using flexible trusts for their products and went over to use discretionary trusts, because if they're going to be taxed the same, you might as well use a discretionary trust rather than a flexible trust, because ironically, it's more flexible. If you want the definition of chargeable lifetime transfers, that's contained in the IHT manual. So basically it says that any lifetime transfer that doesn't qualify as a potentially exempt transfer is a chargeable lifetime transfer. And when money goes into a discretionary trust, it's what's called a relevant property trust. And that's where relevant property is where you get periodic and exit charges. And we've included a link on the slides in case you wanted to go into it. Obviously, there's also transfers into companies, or certain transfers into companies are also deemed to be chargeable lifetime transfers. They're not money going into trust, so periodic and exit charges don't apply there. And to be honest with you, it's quite unusual to come across such a transfer. So if we have a look at lifetime transfers into trust, as I say, anything that goes into a discretionary trust is what's called relevant property. And this relevant property is what we're going to look at. There are some instances where you can have a discretionary trust, but don't have relevant property in it. For example, excluded property trusts can be discretionary, but the money, if it's settled into the trust before the person becomes UK domicile or deemed domicile, it will remain excluded property. So periodic charges shouldn't apply on that unless there's any changes to that trust in the future. So if we have a look at an example, or examples, so transfers into discretionary trusts, you've got gift trusts, normal standard discretionary gift trusts, discounted gift trusts, or flexible reversionary trusts. And then since March 2006, some of the changes meant that accumulation and maintenance trusts ceased being potentially exempt transfers. So the use of A&M trusts certainly declined after 2006, but there are workarounds around accumulation and maintenance trusts. For example, we've got a product where we've recreated the structure. And you've also got what we call non-qualifying interest in possession trusts. So if somebody sets up a flexible trust or an interest in possession trust, that's deemed to be relevant property again. A qualifying interest in possession trust is any one that was set up before 2006 or one that is set up on death, so what's called an immediate post-death interest trust. They don't have relevant property on them unless anything is changed. So, as I say, once you've got relevant property within a trust, that's where you get periodic and exit charges, and that's what we're going to go through and have a look at today. So if we have a look at periodic charges, sort of high level, well, it's the trustee's responsibilities to fill in the paperwork and report any periodic charges. Sometimes they have to make a return to HMRC even if there isn't any tax paid, and that's something that the Office of Tax Simplification picked up on in their report. So it's important that they need to decide if there's a periodic charge, and if there is, they need to then complete IHT 100 and 100D. And also there's a couple of supplementary forms, which are D34 and D39, which we come across quite a lot because they refer to life policies held under trust and foreign life policies held under trust. So as you can see, potentially trustees would have to fill in four forms in some instances where there's no tax payable, which seems a bit strange, but that's what the current rules are. Hopefully they will get changed. But the periodic charge is essentially 6% of the value of the trust fund over the nil rate band. Now there's some variables to add into that calculation, because when you're valuing the trust fund, it's not only the actual assets within the trust, but it's also any distributions that have been made to beneficiaries in the previous 10 years. And the available nil rate band is not necessarily the nil rate band that is available on the 10th anniversary, and we'll come on to that. And then the trustees need to decide whether there's actually a reporting requirement. Now, the reporting requirements are actually if it's 80% of the nil rate band is used. So even if there's not a periodic charge, because it's not exceeding 100% of the nil rate band, if it goes over 80%, then paperwork is required by HMRC. And then we've also got the trust register service to consider, because if a tax liability falls on the trustees, then they need to register that trust on the online trust registration service that the HMRC introduced this year. So what we're going to do is we'll work through some examples. We'll have a look at how the value of the trust is calculated. So although I've given you a high-level explanation, we'll go into it in a bit more detail. We'll have a look at what's included as a distribution from a trust, and also how we calculate the available nil rate band that the trustees have that they can use. So first off, we'll look at how the trust the value of the trust fund is calculated. And for this, we'll have a look at just a standard discretionary trust, because it's nice and simple and straightforward, and then we can build into and have a look at the other type of trusts afterwards. So if we have a look at a discretionary gift trust, just waiting for it to appear on the screen, there you go. So we've got our a chart there, our timeline across the bottom, where we've come to the first 10-year anniversary. Important point to make there is periodic charges apply every 10-year anniversary, not just at the first 10 years. So it's important to bear in mind that trustees need to do this on every 10th anniversary. So we've got our nil rate band, which as you can see remains level for the short term before it starts increasing, hopefully in line with CPI, he says with his fingers crossed. So we've got the value of a discretionary trust. The money that went into the trust was below the nil rate band at outset, so therefore there was no entry IHT charges, and the trust has grown to £400,000. For this example, we're going to assume that the nil rate band is 350, A, because we'll allow for some increase, but also it's a nice round figure. And so therefore, when we work out the value of the trust, or the periodic charge, we take the £400,000, which is what the trust property is worth. We deduct the nil rate band, and it's a nil rate band on the 10th anniversary, and that gives us an excess of £50,000. We then apply the periodic charge, which is 6%, to that excess, and so therefore in this instance, the trustees have got a liability of £3,000. And it's important to stress that that liability falls on the trustees. If that's paid for by the settlor or by a third party, that's a further gift into the trust because that money should come out of the trust assets. Okay, so that's a nice sort of straightforward way of looking at how we value the trust and what the periodic charge is worked on. If we start to look at distributions in the previous 10 years, because that's something else we need to add into the value, and we'll look at how this works, again, keeping a discretionary gift trust, but where, again, our timeline comes up. We've got the value of the trust, and as you can see, twice in the first 10 years, the trustees have decided to pay some money out to the beneficiaries. These are distributions to the beneficiaries, so £200,000 that's paid out in about year four and £50,000 that's paid out in around about year eight. So when we get to the value of the trust on the 10th anniversary, this is not as high as the previous one, so it's fallen down to £250,000. So again, that's below the nil rate band on the 10th anniversary. But what we need to do is we need to add in the distributions that have been paid and add them onto the value of the trust. So the trust is worth £250,000. There's a distribution of £200,000 and another one of £50,000, which gives us a total of £500,000, which is either in the trust or come out of the trust in the previous 10 years. The nil rate band is £350,000, so the excess in this instance is going to be £150,000. We then apply the periodic charge rate of 6%. So £150,000, by 6%, gives us a tax charge of £9,000. And again, that's payable by the trustees. So again, needs to come out of trust assets and shouldn't really be paid by anybody else unless they're making a further gift. So it's important to bear in mind there's distributions, and as we'll see when we look at different trust structures, some money that comes out could be a distribution and some not. So it's important to distinguish between those. So if we now go back to our calculation, we have a look, and we also need to look at how to calculate the available nil rate band that the trustees have when they have a periodic charge calculation. So going back to our discretionary gift trust and our timeline, so again, over the 10 years, we've seen the price of the value of the trust fluctuate. We've got the two distributions that have been made within that 10-year period. Trust value again is £250,000. However, in this instance, the client actually put £100,000 into a different discretionary trust 6 years before this trust. Now, when you calculate the available nil rate band for periodic charge calculations, you need to take the periodic charge on the 10th anniversary or the 10-year anniversary, whichever one it is, whether it be 10, 20, 30, 40, and so on. And you need to deduct any chargeable transfers that were made in the 7 years before the trust was established. Now, by definition, you can see that if the trustees get to sort of like the 50th or the 60th anniversary of a trust, which you can have, they're going to have to go back quite a long way to establish that. So the trustees need to know any other gifts that the settlor made before the trust was set up. They need the gift history so they can do this. In this instance, they say they've made a £100,000 gift 6 years beforehand. So that £100,000 gift will actually use up part of the nil rate band, and therefore the nil rate band available to the trust will reduce by £100,000. So in this instance, the nil rate band is £350,000 at the time of the 10-year anniversary, but we need to reduce it by £100,000 for this trust calculation. And so therefore, the nil rate band, the available nil rate band available to the trustees is only £250,000 rather than £350,000. We then calculate the excess in the same way as we did before. So we've got £250,000 is the value of the trust, £200,000 and £50,000 were both distributions in the previous 10 years. And then we deduct off the available nil rate band, which in this instance is £250,000, giving us an excess the same amount. Again, the periodic charge calculation is at 6% of the excess, which gives us a liability of £15,000, and that is payable by the trustees. So as you can see, as I say, the trustees need to know the gift history so that they can actually calculate the periodic charge correctly. So relevant property trusts that you've probably come across in the main retail market would be gift and loan trusts, discounted gift trusts, flexible reversionary trusts. And what we're going to do is we'll have a look at how each one differs when you look at the value of the, or when you look at calculating the periodic charge and the value in the trust and the distributions and the available nil rate band. So if we have a look at the first one of these, gift and loan trusts, essentially these are trusts that are set up with a nominal gift outset, ours uses the £10 gift just to set the date of the trust, and then a large amount of money is loaned to the trustees. So the growth is outside the trust, but the loan remains in the settlor's estate. So when you value the trust, it's the value of what's in the trust less or reduced by the outstanding loan, because that's still potentially chargeable to IHT in the settlor's estate, and therefore it's something that the trustees owe back to the client. It's a liability the trustees have. What we need to do also is consider any distributions in the previous 10 years. Now, loan repayments that have gone back to the settlor aren't distributions, it's distributions to beneficiaries. So if the trustees have repaid any of the loan back to the settlor, well, that's fine, that's okay, that doesn't need to be factored back in, it's just them repaying the liability that they've got. But they need to be aware of any distributions that have gone to beneficiaries. Now, in many cases, people won't make distributions to the beneficiary, or many trustees won't make distributions to a beneficiary whilst there's a loan outstanding, because they need to make sure they can still repay that loan, but you may have some instances where that's occurred. We then need to look at the trust nil rate band, and obviously taking into account any chargeable lifetime transfers or chargeable transfers that have been made in the 7 years beforehand. And this comes back to the order of gifting, where we have different presentations and where we've already done webinars on this, where we always say that gift and loan should come first. So if we have a look at an example where somebody has put £400,000 or lent £400,000 to the trustees, in year three there's a £50,000 loan repayment, and in year eight there's a £50,000 distribution to the beneficiaries. And the fund over a 10-year period, despite those distributions or repayments, has grown to £614,000. So going back to our timeline and how this looks in a chart. So we've got our 10-year anniversary and our nil rate band. So if we plot the value of the trust, you can see there that you've got a loan repayment and a distribution. The initial transfer into the trust was £400,000. That did exceed the nil rate band, but it wasn't a transfer of value. It was actually a loan, so therefore there was no entry inheritance tax charge. We've then got the value of the trust on the 10-year anniversary as £614,000. But we only need to look at the growth, so we don't need to look at the actual loan repayment. So the growth element that's in the trust, net of the loan, as you can see at start is zero, and then that has gradually grown and obviously stepped down when money has been paid out. But it's important to remember that you just net down the value of the trust. So by the time you look at the loan repayment that's come back out, the net value of the trust is only going to be £264,000, because there's still £350,000 that the trustees owe, so they don't pay tax on something that they've got a liability for. So in this instance, we then look at the excess. So we've got £264,000. We then add in the distribution that went to the beneficiaries of £50,000 in year eight. And then we deduct the available nil rate band, which in this instance is the full nil rate band that was available on the 10-year anniversary. In this instance, £350,000. And as you can see, it's zero. Okay, you don't get negative figures, it only goes down as far as zero, but the value of the trust is within the nil rate band, and therefore there is no periodic charge. So that's gift and loans. If we now have a quick look at discounted gift trusts and how these work. So a discounted gift trust, as you'll be aware, is one where somebody puts money into the trust where the settlor retains the right to the regular withdrawals out of an investment bond. And for that, they get a discount, which is the capital value of the income stream that they have retained. So the value of the trust on the 10th anniversary or on the 20th or 30th anniversary is going to be the value of the trust assets less the discount, because that's the capital value of the obligation that trustees have to provide the income stream back to the settlor. So it's effectively the discount calculation needs to be redone on the 10th anniversary. We need to look at the distributions in the previous 10 years. Again, the payments, or we put income, but the withdrawals that go back to the settlor are not distributions, because they're carved out at outset. So therefore, when the settlor has given the money into the trust or put the money in the trust, they have retained the right to those payments, so therefore they're not distributions. You do need to look at distributions to the beneficiaries. Under rules around DGTs, money can't go to the beneficiaries until a settlor's died. So again, you need to bear that in mind. With DGTs, generally the people who use these are of mature years, so they might not get to their 20th or 30th anniversary, but certainly many of them will hit their 10-year anniversary. And again, we need to take the nil rate band at the 10th anniversary, reduced down by chargeable transfers. One of the things just to mention around the value of the discount is on the 10th anniversary, it needs to be recalculated, okay? And we'll come on to that in an example, but you can go to a provider. We'll quite happily help with the value of the discount. HMRC are quite comfortable that we just aged the client by 10 years. So if you have a client, when they took out their DGT, maybe they were 65 but got rated to age 70. On the 10th anniversary, you just do a standard discount calculation with them based on the age of 80. So you just literally add 10 years to their age and just do the calculation. You don't need new medical underwriting or anything like that. HMRC are quite pragmatic and will quite happily just accept that as the way forward and for recalculating the discount on the 10th anniversary or 20th and so on. So if we have a look at our chart for a discounted gift trust, we've got here our timeline again with our nil rate band and our 10-year anniversary line. So we add in the value of the trust. As you can see, there's more than the nil rate band went in, and that's because of the value of the discount. And we've got there the withdrawals that have come out annually, and it looks rather messy and rather, so we'll just smooth that line over. But essentially the reversions that come out every year in this instance will change the value of the trust. The settlor's been alive for the whole 10 years, so there's not been any distributions, and the payments that go back to the settlor aren't distributions, so we don't really need to worry about those. As I say, we'll smooth the lines just to make it look a bit prettier. So we've got the value of the bond, and then we've got the discount outset, as I say, so that's why they actually invested below the nil rate band as far as inheritance tax gifting is concerned. So we then look at the net value of the trust, and that just broadly follows the gross value less the discount, obviously. And that's the net value is what we need to pay attention to when we start looking at periodic charges. When we get to the 10th anniversary, as I say, new discount calculation is performed because the trustees still have that obligation moving forward to provide withdrawals back to the settlor and provide them with that income stream. In this instance, the value is below the nil rate band, and therefore there's no periodic charge that's payable. But thinking about DGTs and some of the instances that can evolve in the future, if we take an example here where a client has £500,000 put into a discounted gift trust and retains a monthly income of just shy of £2,000, the discount received would have been £350,000. And therefore the chargeable lifetime transfer into the discretionary trust was only 150, so well within the nil rate band. If the settlor dies in year 8, what happens to the trust? And that's what we'll have a look at next. But we'll assume that the growth on the trust has been 5%, so we've got a value in year 8 of 511,000 and a value in year 10 at 536. This is obviously assuming that the trustees don't wind the trust up when the settlor died. So again, having a look at a nice chart to try and demonstrate the point. So we've got our timeline and our 10-year anniversary line. We add in the value of the trust, or the value of the bond, that sits under the trust, and the net value of the trust to year 8. Okay, and we know that the settlor in this example is going to die in year 8. So effectively, the obligation to provide the withdrawals and the income stream back to the settlor has disappeared. So therefore, the gross value is now the same as the net value. So the beneficiaries are entitled to all the money that's in that trust because, say, the income stream or the obligation to provide that has been removed. If the trustees maintain the trust and it goes on to the 10th anniversary, as you can see in the example, well, that's going to be above the nil rate band. And so therefore, we're going to start looking at a periodic charge calculation. So the value of the trust is £536,000. Sorry, just getting my figures mixed up. Nil rate band, again, in the examples, is going to be £350,000. And so therefore, the excess is going to give us £186,000, of which 6% on tax charge will apply, which gives us a tax liability of £11,000. And again, that's going to have to be paid for by the trustees. So it's important to bear in mind that when the settlor dies, the gross value is the same as the net value. And if that's right before a periodic charge calculation, that's going to change the way the trustees have to deal with it. If we move on now and have a look at flexible reversionary trust, so this is, for example, our wealth preservation trust. Again, we'll look at the value of the trust fund, which is literally the value of the trust, whatever's in it, and then you've got distributions in the previous 10 years. Again, similar to the DGT, because the wealth preservation trust or a flexible reversionary trust carves out the right to a benefit at outset, any payments that go back to the settlor, whether they be maturities or any other type of reversions, are actually not included. They're not distributions back to the beneficiaries. But you need to do consider any money that has actually gone to the beneficiaries. And again, the trust nil rate band is going to be the nil rate band on the 10th anniversary, reduced by any chargeable transfers in the previous 10 years. So if we have a look at an example, we've got the original investment of £325,000. In year three, we've got a payment back to the settlor, a reversionary payment, and also the same again in year eight. And then when we get to year 10, if we gross it up by 5% a year net of charges, we then look at a value of £480,000. So again, going back to our lovely charts where we've got our nil rate band, and just waiting for it to appear on the screen. There we go. So we've got our nil rate band and our 10-year anniversary line. We've got the value of the trust with the maturities or the reversions in there. So we've got the £250,000 payments that have come out, and then the value of the trust is £480,000. Again, nil rate band is 350. So the excess, when we look at calculating the excess payment, we've got the value of the trust. Remember, don't have to worry about the reversions because they're not classed as distributions. So we reduce, or we've got the nil rate band of 350,000. So we reduce the value of the trust by that, which gives us an excess of £130,000, and a periodic charge of 6% gives us a liability of £7,810, and that's payable by the trustees. So that's how periodic charges work. Have you got an understanding of those? When you get a periodic charge or you have an entry charge into IHT, in most cases, you'll get an exit charge when money is paid out to the beneficiaries. So once you've established whether there's a periodic charge or there wasn't it liable to an entry charge, you then need to consider any money that goes out to the beneficiaries could potentially have an exit charge. So we'll look at these in the first 10 years, but they apply after every periodic charge calculation. So it's important to bear in mind, because if you do have trusts that exceed the nil rate band every 10 years, then every time any money goes out to a beneficiary, there's going to be a tax charge. Tax charge isn't high, as you can see by, you know, the 6% of the excess. It is something you need to bear in mind, and it is a cost that the trustees have to bear. Some people do consider winding trusts up in year 9, for example, just to avoid the periodic charge. However, you're taking money out of a 6% charging environment into a 40% charging environment. So that just depends on the client situations. But if we look at exit charges, so as I say, if there's initial charge payable, so if somebody exceeds their nil rate band, then you get an exit charge in the first 10 years. Generally, if there's no initial charge, there's no exit charge, but we'll come on to an example where potentially that can happen, where you can have somebody who sticks within their nil rate band but does get an exit charge. But once you get 10 years down the line, the liabilities to exit charge is based on a potential periodic charge. And we'll look at how we calculate these if there was a periodic charge occur. So if we look at exit charges in the first 10 years, and we look at an example here where we've got May 2012, Stuart has done an outright gift of £300,000. So that's a potentially exempt transfer, so he needs to survive 7 years for that to drop outside of his estate. It doesn't count towards his nil rate band because it's potentially exempt. And as I say, once he gets to 7 years, then it fulfills its destiny and is fully exempt. He's got his annual exemptions used elsewhere, so we're not going to worry about the £3,000 gifting allowance or gifting exemption that they have. Now, a few years later, Stuart decides to do £250,000 into a discretionary trust. Again, he's used his annual exemption elsewhere, and the nil rate band at the time this was done was £325,000. And then, unfortunately, Stuart dies in 2018, and the trustees decide to wind the trust up and distribute money to the beneficiaries a few months later in August. And we'll say that the value of the trust at that time was £320,000. Now, because his original gift into the discretionary trust was within his nil rate band, and you didn't have to worry about the potential exempt transfer at the time, you would think that there wouldn't be an exit charge. However, in this instance, that's not the case, and we'll have a look at how that can occur. So, it's important to bear in mind that a trust only has one nil rate band, unless they've got joint tenants. In this instance, there's only one nil rate band for Stuart. So, he made his potential exempt transfer in 2012, which subsequently, because he died within 7 years of making it, has become chargeable. He's got his chargeable lifetime transfer in 2015, which would have had, if because the PEP failed, should have had an initial entry IHT charge on it, because it would have exceeded his nil rate band. Obviously, at the time he made it, that wasn't the case, but looking back, that is the case, really. So he's got a potential, there would have been a periodic charge of 30% of the lifetime rate, which gives you the 6%. That's how they calculate the 6% 6% rate. So what we need to do on the distribution, now you don't go back and have a look at what the IHT entry charge would have been at that time, because he made it and it was fine, it was within his nil rate band. That will sort itself out in the inheritance tax calculation. In this instance, we're just looking at the exit charge. But what we need to do is to calculate the hypothetical initial charge that would have applied. And we don't use the 20% lifetime IHT rate, we use the 6% rate. So we use the same calculation that we would do on a 10-year anniversary to actually establish the rate of tax applicable to the trust. And that's what you need to do with an exit charge. You calculate the rate of tax that the trust paid on the previous 10th anniversary or at outset, and that is the basis of the exit charge calculation. So in this instance, we've got May 2012, we've got the failed PEP, which has become chargeable, and that used up £300,000 of the nil rate band, so £25,000 was left over, and that could be used against the chargeable lifetime transfer that Stuart would have made in May 2012. So effectively, the money that went into the discretionary trust, £225,000, was in excess of the nil rate band that would have applied. There's a 6% charge on that, or would have been a 6% charge on that, which therefore gives us a tax liability of £13,500. Therefore, the rate of tax that was applicable to that trust at outset would have been £13,500 over £250,000, being the value of the trust, or the value of the transfer, and so therefore that gives us an effective tax rate of 5.4%, which applies would have applied to that trust. The trust has completed 13 quarters with an exit charge. You're allowed to taper it based on the number of complete calendar quarters that have elapsed since the previous 10-year anniversary or since outset. So in this instance, we've got our value of the trust, which is £320,000. Apply the rate of tax applicable to the trust, which is 5.4%. And then we're allowed to taper that down by the number of complete calendar years that have elapsed. In this instance, there's 13 complete calendar quarters, which you do get 40 calendar quarters in every 10 years. So therefore, we can divide it by 40, multiply by 13, and that gives us a tax liability of £5,616. And that, again, is payable by the trustees because they're the tax point for this. So important to bear in mind that there are instances where even though somebody kept within their nil rate band at outset, there can be times when an exit charge can apply in the first 10 years. If we look now after 10 years, we'll take an example here where in 2008, John decided to transfer £250,000 into a discretionary trust. Again, used his annual exemption elsewhere, so we don't have to worry about that in the calculation or the example. Nil rate band at the time was only £312,000, and he's made no previous gifts. And therefore there is no initial charge on the transfer into the trust because it was within his nil rate band at the time. Moving on to May 2018, is there a periodic charge? due. I can't say that. So we look at the value of the trust on the 10th anniversary is going to be £450,000. The nil rate band at that time is £325,000. Therefore, there is an excess of £125,000, which gives us a liability for a periodic charge of £7,500. So that's the trust when he gets to the 10th anniversary. If we then have a look at exits, so a few months a few years later, when we get to May 2020, they decide to distribute £200,000 to a beneficiary of the trust. We look at the effective rate of tax. So again, we go back to the periodic charge calculation. So we look at the potential periodic charge, or the actual periodic charge that was paid in this instance, over the value of the trust, which gives us a rate of 1.67%, which would have applied to the trust. We look at the number of complete calendar quarters, as I say, since the previous calculation. So we've got 2 years is 8 quarters that have elapsed out of potentially 40 quarters. So we take the £200,000 distribution, apply the rate of tax of 1.67% and divide it by 40 and multiply by 8, which gives us an exit charge of 668, which the trustees will pay. So it's important to bear in mind that these liabilities do fall on the trustees, and they do need to consider this every time money is paid out to a beneficiary of a discretionary trust, especially where there's been tax due. Again, if we have a look at a discretionary will trust and how these fall into it. So we've got May 2018, we've got Martin, who on his death, £400,000 was placed into a discretionary will trust. His wife died in January 2016 and left everything to Martin, so therefore he had a transferable nil rate band available. So his personal representatives claimed that nil rate band, so he had a total nil rate band of £650,000 available to use on his death. And that's why the £400,000 which went in was within the nil rate band, and so therefore there was no tax on that initial transfer because it was all within it. The residual estate uses up the balance of the nil rate band, and then anything over that would have suffered inheritance tax. If we then move forward to May 2020 and the trustees decide to distribute £100,000 to a beneficiary, you would think that there was, because there was no initial charge, there is no exit charge. However, the trust only has one nil rate band available for the periodic and exit charge calculation because it was a single settler. There was only Martin put money into it. His PRs, personal representatives, could claim the transferable nil rate band at the time of his death, but that doesn't apply to the trust moving forward. So the trust has one nil rate band. Therefore, we'll say that we need to work out the hypothetical effective tax rate again. So again, we have to use the 6% calculation on the value of the trust that would have applied at outset. So £400,000 went into the trust. The single nil rate band would have been £325,000, giving us an excess at the time the trust was set up of £75,000 and a hypothetical tax charge of £4,500. Again, calculate the effective rate of tax that would have applied to that to the trust. So we take the tax paid and divide it by the value of the trust, and we look at a tax rate of 1.125%, and then we apply that onto the distribution that's gone out to the beneficiary, so £100,000 multiplied by 1.125. We're again, we're 2 years into a 10-year period, so therefore we only pay in respect of the 8 calendar quarters which have elapsed. So divide it by 40, multiply by 8, and gives us a tax liability of £225,000. So there you go. So another example of where you can have an exit charge in the first 10 years. And I think somebody had already asked a question about will trusts, so hopefully that will answer that question for you. So if we look, consider cases where there's money or relevant property within a trust where it hasn't been relevant property for a full 10 years. This can happen, for example, if somebody settles an additional amount of money into an existing discretionary trust, or maybe they've got an excluded property trust where something has changed and that property has ceased to be excluded property and therefore becomes relevant. So you're allowed to actually gain relief for the number, again, the number of calendar quarters during which the asset was not relevant property. The IHT manual reference is on the screen. So for example, if you've got somebody in May 2018 who's got a trust that was worth £450,000 and had £7,500 payable by the trustees. Well, and if we say for the purpose of this example, £100,000 has only been relevant property for just shy of 2 years, then relief is allowed. So the £100,000 multiplied by 6%, and then we can taper that down by the number of calendar quarters. So that would allow a reduction of £2,550 for the time that £100,000 wasn't deemed to be relevant property. So it's just important to bear in mind if you do have instances where that's the case, although you take the value of the trust on the 10th anniversary, if somebody has settled money, even if they'd done it 9 years into the 10-year period, that will still be relevant property, but they don't pay tax on it going back to the previous 10th anniversary. So if we start, go back to having a look at the paperwork that needs to be completed. So it's the trustee's responsibility to report the value of the trust and whether any periodic charge arises. We need to look at the IHC 100 forms and 100A if a gift has been made, or 100D if we're looking at the actual periodic charge calculation. And as I say, there are some supplementary forms. But what we need to do is to consider if the nil rate band has been exceeded, then you've got a periodic charge calculation, in which case those forms are needed. But they're also needed if the client gets above 80% of the nil rate band. So even if no tax is payable, they still need to return these forms to HMRC. Ironically, the penalty for not receiving them is a percentage of the tax due. And as the tax due would be zero, the penalty would also be zero, but that doesn't negate the fact that they should be reporting it to HMRC. As I say, there was an Office of Tax Simplification report that came out on Friday, which did comment on unnecessary paperwork and why people should have to actually report IHT when there isn't anything payable. And I think there was an interesting statistic in there from, I think it was the 2015-16 tax year, where there was 588,000 deaths. Just shy of 50% completed IHT forms and return them to HMRC, but only 24,000 actually paid any tax. It's quite interesting. And it just goes to show you how much empty paperwork HMRC should be getting. So OTS have commented that the reporting structure is very difficult. And as an example, I think off memory, the IHT 100D form is about 8 pages long, and the guidance to complete it is about 40. So it's very, very laborious to complete these forms, but they are actually needed. But hopefully the HMRC will listen to the Office of Tax Simplification and make it a lot easier moving forward. So we also have IHC 100C, which needs to be completed for any money that comes out of a discretionary trust. So I'm waiting for that to come up on the screen. So any money that ceases to be held, so distributions that come out, there's an IHC 100C that needs to be considered. And again, if you've got sort of life policy trusts and from providers, you've got the D34 supplementary form, which is for life assurance policies, and a D394 form, which is for foreign assets. So that includes sort of international bonds. So if you've got any DGTs or flexible reversionary trusts with offshore bonds into it, potentially you need four forms when you get to the 10-year anniversary if they've exceeded the nil rate band. As I say, hopefully this will get simpler, but at the moment, this is how it is. And also, if there's a tax liability that does fall on the trustees, as I said earlier, they need to consider the trust registration service, which was something HMRC introduced. It did stutter at the start because there were certain IT issues. And the trustees need to register a trust on the trust registration service, if it's discretionary, if there is a liability that falls on the trustees. Now, when you have an investment bond under a trust, generally the chargeable gain is assessed on the settlor if they're alive in the tax year, or were alive in the tax year in which the gain arises, or people will deflect the tax liability to a beneficiary by appointing or assigning policies out of the trust. But if a chargeable gain falls on the trustees, or a periodic charge or an exit charge, then they need to go onto the trust registration service and actually complete the data on there. Obviously, you don't need to do it if it's a bare trust, because that looks through to the beneficiary. And we have included in the attachment, there's a link to a briefing note that we've done around the trust registration service, which will help explain how all that works. So in summary, obviously most providers will not be able to tell you when you get to a 10-year anniversary. That's because, in general, the trust could be held externally Obviously, if you have packaged products, that's slightly different. But if you have trusts that maybe a solicitor has set up or will trust has set up, if you've got investment bonds held underneath it, the investment bond provider doesn't know when that trust started necessarily. And so therefore, this is something you need to be able to work with the trustees. Ultimately, it's their responsibility to get this done, but they will be looking to you, maybe as financial advisors, to try and help them, as they would look to us as providers to be able to help. Obviously, we can provide the valuations for the assets that we know are under the trust that we hold, but you may have investment bonds with two, three, or four trustees. You may have collectives that are held under that trust, and one provider wouldn't know what's held. So it's important for the trustees and their advisors to actually gather that information and make sure they're in a position to return those forms, because the IHT 100 forms for periodic charges, they get 6 months in which to return those forms and to give them to HMRC. So 6 months to provide the forms and the payment, sorry. So it's important that they get that done. We'll quite happily help with calculations where we can, so things like calculating discount and so on. You can get those from providers because we've got the software and the ability to do that. So that's probably the easiest way to do that. So if we just recap on our learning objectives, periodic charges and how they apply to different structures, I think we've covered that off. We've looked at the common trust, so sort of a gift and loan, a DGT and a flexible reversionary trust. Exit charges, when and how they apply. So, say if you get a periodic charge, then on a 10-year anniversary, then for the next 10 years you've got exit charges, but there are some instances where they can apply in the first 10 years. And also the reporting requirements for HMRC and the Trust Registration Service. So I hope you found that useful. I think we're fairly close on time. If we've got any questions, we can take them.
So I think we'll probably leave it there for now. I'm just conscious that we are sort of overrunning on time a little bit. We've had quite a lot of questions come in. So I think what we'll try and do is anybody who's raised a question this morning, we'll come back to you outside of the webinar. So at least we'll make sure that you get an answer on that at some point today.
Okay.
But as you can see, we do appreciate that obviously this is not necessarily a line of business that you guys may be writing on a daily basis, and obviously some complications around the charges. As Neil said, we do offer an extensive range of support for you. As you can see on the screen there, there's brochures and newsletters and briefing notes, as Neil's alluded to. In addition to that, obviously you have the support of your either central or regionally based account managers, so do sort of rely on them to help you out as well. And finally, ICANN Technical Services team, who Neil is a member of, we have a team of specialists across all business lines there, so again, please do feel free to utilise them. And worth noting that we've gone into partnership with an intelligent partnership. We've produced an estate planning guide, which is very sort of all-encompassing around all aspects of trust and anything to do with estate planning. As I say, put together by an intelligent partnership. There's a link on the screen there for you to register, and we can send you a hard copy should you be interested. So I think we'll leave it there for now. So thank you very much for joining us this morning. Obviously, we do value your feedback on these webinars, so we'd ask you to complete the short survey as you leave the webinar, just to leave your comments on today. We'll switch off the audio now, but you can obviously still raise questions if you have any, and as I say, we'll come back to you outside of the webinar for that. But thank you again this morning, and hope you'll join us next time. Thank you.